are listening, of nations of the world, has often hung upon accident or upon decisions that made another way would have substantially altered the course of human events.
Suppose, by a stroke of fate, the Spanish Armada had overcome England in 1588. Suppose fate decreed that Dwight D. Eisenhower had decided to retain his command of the ATO and not run for president.
Yes, much depends upon a stroke of fate. And tonight we rewrite history as we present a dramatic conception of what might have happened.
If, by a stroke of fate, Alexander the Great had lived beyond the age of 32 and continued his conquest of the world.
On June 13, 322 B.C., in the ancient city of Babylon, in what is now modern Iran, Alexander the Great, aged 32, died of a fever. Alexander began his royal career as king of the Greek state of Macedonia and finished by founding an empire that included most of the known East and some of the West as well, perhaps 2 million square miles of conquered territory. The stroke of fate that changes history tonight is Alexander's recovery from the illness at Babylon that actually proved fatal. The play from then on is historical speculation, based on what we know to be Alexander's real intentions. Our story tonight is related by the lady with whom Alexander frequently corresponded during his years of conquest, his mother, Queen Olympias of Macedonia.
My son Alexander, when he was 20 years old, succeeded his father Philip to the throne of Macedonia. There are those who say that Zeus, king of the gods, is Alexander's father. But I, who should know, say it is Philip. 2 years after becoming king, Alexander crossed the Hellespont into Asia with 40,000 troops. And in 11 years he conquered Phoenicia, Egypt, Palestine, Mesopotamia, and the rest of the great empire of Persia. Becoming the great king of Persia after defeating the Persian monarch Darius III... Then he swept from the Caspian Sea to the Hindu Kush mountains of India and continued to conquer much of that land, returning to one of the four capitals of Persia, Susa, where, after a great state banquet, 80 of his officers married daughters of noble Medes and Persians. And he himself married Barsina, the elder daughter of Darius, according to the Persian custom, in which the bridegroom sit in a row and their bride sit next to them.
Barsina, I must now speak to our guest.
My noble friend, to each man who is married today, I make a gift of 10 golden talents. The best way to join Europe with Asia is not by beams, nor rafts, nor by lifeless and unfeeling bonds, but as we do, by the ties of lawful love. And now, I will first marry the lady Barsina. And then each of you in like manner will marry your chosen bride. Barsina, give me your right hand.
Here, my lord king.
I take your hand in mine, and kissing you thus, I do now declare you to be my wife.
My son Alexander wrote me of this marriage, his second. For Macedonians may have more than one wife at a time, a ridiculous custom, as it implies the superiority of men. One night I had a fearful dream concerning Alexander, and in my dream a voice cried that I alone could save his life. I then took a vessel from Thessalonica, where I was, to the city of Tyre, and traveled by forced stages to Babylon in Persia. Alexander was there, resting in the dwelling of his friend, Medius. And as I was about to enter Alexander's chamber, I saw coming through its curtained doorway my son's physician, Philip.
My Lady Olympias, we have but just heard that you were on your way here. Was your journey pleasant?
Fair enough, Philip. How ill is the king?
How know you he is ill, my lady?
Tell me.
He has a fever which has been aggravated by a drinking bout. He says he will rise tonight and resume his revels. I have warned him, but you know Alexander.
I will see to it that he rests.
If he does not, his illness may have fatal consequences. Farewell, my Lady Olympias.
My son, my noble son.
Beloved mother.
Is it in truth 11 years since I last saw you?
Most noble of mothers.
How gracious are the gods that they allow me to embrace you while you are yet alive.
While I'm yet alive? Honored lady, what do you mean by this?
Did I say while you are yet alive?
You did.
It was but a slip of the tongue, my son.
Ah, the tongue that slips betrays the thought it would hide. What do you mean, my mother?
You are ill of a fever, Alexander.
And you think this fever will kill me? I've been wounded many times on my head and neck at the Battle of Granicus, in the thigh at Issus, in the shoulder at Gaza. My leg was broken in Turkestan. 3 times was I wounded in Afghanistan. And in India, an arrow penetrated my lungs. If these wounds have not killed me, do you think a trifling fever can? It's nothing. I will rise this evening to feast and drink with my friends.
If you do not rest, my son, you will die.
Ooh, you talk like my physician, Philip. And yet I have more knowledge of medicine than he, since my teacher Aristotle, as you well know, did also instruct me in the healing art. This evening, I go to feast.
Alexander, why do you think I endured 3 weeks of hard travel to come to you here? I had a dream, my son, in which I saw your throne, the throne of Alexander. But on it sat another.
Who?
I knew him not. It was a warning from the gods that your life was in danger. And a voice cried in my ear, go to your son, only you can save him.
Oh, but no. With so many of my plans for the world yet unfulfilled, my father Zeus would not let me yet die of a little fever.
Alexander, let the Greeks call you the son of Zeus or of Hercules. Let the Egyptians name you the son of their great god Amun-Ra, but I am your mother. Let there be no such talk between us. Hero as you are yet mortal. This I swear.
Your tongue is as rough as ever, but as truthful.
Alexander, heed a mother's plea and rest from this fever.
A mother's plea? It is worth more than 1,000 others. I will do as you wish.
Five days later, when the fever had broken and Alexander was asleep and I had retired to my own chamber, there came to visit me there my son's wife, Barcina.
Hail, Lady Olympias.
So you are Barcina.
Lady Olympias, I am most grateful to you for saving the life of my husband.
I saved the life of my son.
Thank you.
You were truly afraid for him?
At first. But then I comforted myself with the thought that if he were gathered to the gods, I would join him speedily.
If Alexander died, you would kill yourself?
Yes.
You would have me then believe you love him?
I do. When at the Battle of Issus, my lord Alexander defeated my father Darius, who was then the great king, he protected the ladies of my family.
My son has always been gallant and considerate of women.
I love him. And I believe he married me because he loves me. At least a little. And he will love me yet more.
There you act the fool. Alexander has said there are 2 things that make him feel like a mortal. Sleep and lovemaking. He is too absorbed in his divinity to indulge his mortality.
But he is divine.
You truly believe this?
Of course. The great king has always been descended from the gods, and Alexander is the great king.
Nonetheless, my son will be your husband in name only. Accept that as truth.
If you say so, Lady Olympias. But I trust you will be satisfied to stay here in Babylon.
I see you know not Alexander at all. Alexander who, when my husband Philip was alive, wept because he felt Philip had left him no more worlds to conquer, will not remain satisfied as long as there is any part of this world that he has not in truth conquered. Three days later, with Alexander recovered from his fever, he took up his dwelling in the palace, and with Nearchus, his admiral, and Cassandra, one of his generals, was planning his next military campaign, the capture of Carthage.
Nearchus?
Yes, Alexander?
You will be in command of the ships that we will gather at Tyre in Phoenicia. Cassandra, you, Ptolemy, and Seleucus will under me command our army that will march from Babylon to Tyre, whence we will all sail against Carthage. For it is the Carthaginian navy that we must first make our own.
Alexander, I ask pardon that I must say this.
Oh, speak freely, Cassandra.
Many of our Macedonians say that they are tired of expeditions, wish to remain here in Babylon, and not sail against Carthage.
I know. They've fallen victim to Persian ease and luxury. I'm prepared for this. We will take with us in their stead the 30,000 Persian youths we've trained in the Macedonian ways of fighting.
Alexander, our Macedonians will not like that.
Will they not, Admiral Nearchus?
They will say that now you have used them to win you an empire, you're dispensing with them.
Am I? Is it I, then, whom are refusing to fight, or they? I'm weary of their complaints. Those who do not want to come with me may stay, or go home. I care not.
As you say, I go to make my preparations, Alexander.
And I as well.
Do so. It is not with you that I'm impatient, but with those who complain. Fare you both well.
Alexander, my son.
Oh, Mother. You were so quiet, I'd forgotten you were here.
Alexander, you are responsible for the reluctance of the Macedonians to follow you in this new adventure.
I responsible?
Yes. They are offended because instead of Macedonians, you appoint so many natives as governors of the countries you conquer. Because you yourself affect Persian ways and Persian dress.
I do that out of respect to the Persians.
But you have conquered the Persians. Why need you show them respect?
So that in return they will respect me. By respect, not by fear, is the best way to rule.
These Macedonians believe you are more Persian than the Persians.
That is not so. I would also teach the Persians and others our Greek ways. I would have them speak the Greek tongue.
Our Macedonians will not like that. For if others speak like Macedonians and use our ways, then of what advantage is it to be a Macedonian? One might just as well be a Persian or an Indian.
Quite so.
But Alexander.
My lord, most noble king.
Yes, Faustina.
Forgive me for coming to you unbidden, but I have learned that you plan to leave Babylon.
That is so, Faustina.
My lord king, why can you not remain here?
You foolish girl. I told you Alexander would not remain quiet here. Not as long as there is yet more glory to be won.
You're wrong, my mother. It is not glory that I'm now seeking. No further riches. But the fulfillment of an ideal. Of a vision.
What ideal?
I learned it from a philosopher I met years ago in Corinth. Diogenes was his name.
You wrote me of him. The man who lived in a tub. The one you asked if there was anything you could do for him. And who answered, yes. You can stand a little to one side and not keep the sun on.
That was the man.
He should have been whipped for his insolence.
I felt if I were not Alexander, I would be Diogenes. I said to him, who are you who have learned the secret of contentment? And he said, I am a citizen of the world. That was the beginning of my vision, my ideal.
I do not understand.
I was afraid you would not.
I, too, do not understand, great king, but I humbly plead that you allow me to go with you on this expedition.
Quiet. It is not for you to make such a request of your lord, but to remain here and await his pleasure.
Olympias, I'm not a child that I cannot myself tell my wife what she must do. Forgive me for having to say that. Barcina, this expedition is most dangerous. But when we've taken Carthage, you may come to me there.
As will I, my son. Alexander's fleet, which he gathered at Tyre, defeated the Carthaginian navy, and he took the great city of Carthage. 6 months later, he revealed his plans for his great conquest of the European continent at a meeting of his commanders.
Ptolemy, you and your fleet will land at Gades and you will conquer Spain. Seleucus, you will land at Massilia in Gaul and sweep through that country. Eucoenus, at Neapolis in Italy and will march northward to take Rome. I myself have a curiosity concerning the island with whose inhabitants the Carthaginians trade for tin. I, Nearchus, Cassander and our forces will sail past the Pillars of Hercules to that distant place. Yes. I have a great curiosity concerning this island called Britain.
¶¶ listening to what might have happened.
If, by a stroke of fate, Alexander the Great had lived beyond the age of 32 and continued his conquest of the world.
Our story is narrated by Olympias, mother of Alexander, has for the most part been speculation based on historical possibility. Historical possibility continues to guide our imagination.
Alexander speedily conquered the island where lived the Britons. For, of course, these savages were no match for his skilled soldiers. He well explored the island, its forests, streams, and meadows, he and the scientists he had brought with him. Then he discovered a place called Londinium, at the estuary of a river at the southeast part of this island of Britain, and camped there for some time.
Alexander, may I ask how much longer we'll remain here in this Londinium? This place of fog and dampness is more fit for fish than for men.
Truly, I believe the Britons who dwell here have gills instead of lungs. So well do they breathe this air, which is half water.
Cassander and Nearchus, my friends, we stay here long enough to found a city, which we will call Alexandria, and which may someday be as great as that Alexandria we founded in Egypt.
Found a city? Here?
Yes, Nearchus. There is a broad river, a fine harbor, and this is a good site for a city. We will first build a library, a theater.
A library? You think it is possible to civilize these barbarians who tattoo themselves blue and who are led by chiefs who are women?
Why not?
I suggest the first thing we do is send them some good cooks.
I think they're worth civilizing. The proof of their greatness is that they've survived living in a climate such as this. We will teach them our Greek language, so that in the future the Briton will talk in Greek. We will spread here our Greek culture. As we will also do in Spain and Italy and Gaul, now that my armies have conquered them, as we will also do in the East. All the nations of the world will be united by one language, one culture, all equal. No one nation will be a man's fatherland. Instead, every man will be a citizen of the whole inhabited earth.
This is then what you intend to do?
Is it, Alexander?
Yes. And you two are the first of my officers to whom I tell these ideas. But soon all will know. And now I must go and speak to the architect concerning the plans for our new Alexandria here. For now, farewell.
Will you have some wine, Cassandra?
Yes, I need it now. So that is what he has been planning. He's forgotten he's a Macedonian.
All nations are to be equal. By the gods, let all other nations be equal to each other, if Alexander so wishes. As long as Macedonia is supreme.
For this, we have left our native land. Follow Alexander these many years.
We are betrayed.
I fear you're right.
We cannot prevent the accomplishment of his plan as long as Alexander lives.
No, Nearchus.
Once Alexander has been gathered to his fathers, the empire will belong to the strongest. And we can rule as Macedonians. And there will be no citizens of the world. Let us talk to the others who will feel as we do. And yes, there is one to whom we must particularly talk. Philip, have you thought on what we have discussed?
I have, Nearchus. And the responsibility you would place on me is enough to make the gods themselves shudder. I have been Alexander's physician many years. And I have loved him.
And so have I, Philip. And so have all of us.
I recall that when Alexander took a fever from leaping into the Cydnus River, and I prepared for him some medicine, a letter arrived from his general Parmenio, saying I had been bribed by Darius to poison Alexander. Alexander showed me the letter, and as I read it, he drank the poison of the medicine that I had prepared.
He cursed you, Philip.
Now it is asked that I betray that trust. that when next he is taken with one of his fevers, I poison him.
If it could be made known what you did, you would be honored by all Greeks who wish Macedonia and the other Greek states to be the first states of the world. Not equal to and reduced to the level of all the others. You will have done a terrible, but infinitely noble deed.
At this time, Barcina and I came to this island of the Britons. She had not been satisfied to stay in Carthage or return to Persia, but had grown pale, mooning over the absence of Alexander. Despite my warnings, this stubborn woman insisted that where Alexander was, there must she be also. So she came to this island and to Londinium, and, of course, I came with her.
My lord king.
Barcina, you should not have come here to this island.
I told her that myself.
Nor should you have come here, Olympias. This is too barbarous a land for ladies.
Methinks that it is an excellent land for ladies, since I hear so many of the British chiefs are women.
Great king, unless I am by your side.
I'm sorry, Barcina, but there is too much work for me to do here to play the loving husband. You'd best return to Babylon.
My lord.
Oh, Philip. What have you in that cup?
Your medicine, Alexander.
You are ill, my lord king.
It's nothing, a slight fever that will soon pass. I've had many such fevers before.
Oh, I'm glad I'm here to nurse you through
it. I tell you it is nothing. But to guard against the infection becoming worse, I do urge you to drink this medicine, this purge of hellebore. Well, put it down on this table, Philip. I will drink it later.
Barcina had no sooner returned to her lodging when she received a visitor.
Noble and mighty Queen Barcina.
Who are you who have requested such urgent audience of me?
I am a wretched servant of Nearchus, the admiral to Alexander. Oh, it's dreadful knowledge that I impart.
What knowledge?
It concerns the very life of the king himself.
The life of the king? Speak.
I dare not try to approach the king. He will not believe me. He will torture me. Or my master will discover what I am about and have me killed. But now that you are here...
Tell me what you know, and quickly.
3 days ago, I did overhear in his tent my master, Nearchus, talk to Philip, the king's physician. Philip did agree, when the king had one of his fevers, to give him in his medicine a slow-working poison.
By the gods, no!
There is a plot against the king's life in which are engaged Nearchus.
My lord king.
Barcina, what do you hear?
Have you yet drunk of the medicine Philip left for you?
I have not. Why do you ask?
Have you drunk of any medicine since you have had this fever?
Why, what has frightened you, Barcina?
Have you?
No, I have not.
Oh, thanks be to the gods.
What is the meaning of this? Alexander, your face has a deeper flush. As your physician, I urge you to drink your medicine to relieve your fever.
Oh, very well, Philip.
My husband, do not drink.
Oh, why not?
Because... Let Philip drink of it first to discover if it is still potent after standing so long.
I will gladly taste of it. Please give me the cup, Alexander.
That's not necessary. I'm sure it's still potent. I'll drink it.
Do not drink. You do not need medicine.
Are you now become a physician, Barcina?
No, but let Philip mix you another potion now or first.
That is not necessary. Well...
There is poison in that cup.
What? This is a libel upon me, Alexander.
Of course.
Barcina, leave me. To call this loyal friend a poisoner.
I will not leave, my lord king, unless you spill out that potion and resolve to drink nothing else that Philip prepares for you.
Leave or I'll... Give me that cup, Barcina.
I will risk drinking this myself. If it is poison, I gladly give my life to save yours. And if it is not, you may kill me if you wish. For libeling your friend.
Do not drink, oh, Barcina. Philip. You drink this medicine. Drain the cup.
I will, Alexander.
Your wife has saved you, Alexander. To have killed her would have been useless. You would still live. Who plotted this with you?
I know their names. And forgive me, but among them are your dearest friends.
And of what use to have conquered the world?
did Barcina prove she was worthy to be the wife of Alexander and the daughter of Olympias? Nearchus, Cassander, and the others in the plot were executed. 10 years later, the states of the world sent their first representatives to the world governing body at Alexandria in Egypt, the capital of the world, where Alexander, addressing them in the universal language Greek, said,
I urge you to consider as your nation the whole inhabited earth. And I pledge myself to render all on earth subject to one law, that of reason, and to one form of government, that of justice.
And now may we introduce our eminent history consultant, Dr. Moses Haddas, professor of Greek and Latin at Columbia University. Dr. Haddas.
The stroke of fate that saved Alexander's life in tonight's drama, his mother's traveling to Babylon to nurse him through his illness, failed to occur. In reality, he did not take proper medical precautions during this fever and died at the age of 32. But let us imagine Alexander had lived on as in tonight's play. It is inconceivable, then, that he should have relinquished his career of conquest. He would have conquered the West as easily as he had in actuality the East. And if Alexander's original objective was merely conquest, his later words and actions can leave no doubt that his larger aim was to make all men equal members of a single society, embracing the whole inhabited world, in which individuals would be not subjects, but citizens. Even if the world has seen military geniuses as great, their object has been conquest rather than fusion. Others have cherished visions as soaring, but have lacked the force necessary to implement them. Alexander combined such great vision with such magnificent military prowess and statesmanship, it is very possible the people of his time would have accepted his ideal of the one world. During the centuries since he lived, there have been men who have thought wistfully of Alexander's dream. If the dream of one world should ever become reality, part of the credit must belong to Alexander the Great.
Thank you, Dr. Haddas. We invite you to listen next week to hear what might have happened
if, by a stroke of fate, America's first secret weapon had succeeded in its intended purpose during the Revolutionary War.
Featured in tonight's Stroke of Fate presentation were Alexander Scorby as Alexander, Anne Seymour as Olympias, and Patricia Wheel as Barcina. Others in the cast were Santos Ortega, Ralph Bell, Kermit Murdoch, and Gordon Peters. Your announcer is Lionel Rico. Stroke of Fate is produced by Mort and Lester Lewis, conceived and written by Mort Lewis, and was directed by Fred Way. Stroke of Fate was prepared in consultation with the Society of American Historians. This is the NBC Radio Network.